Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined by Haley Orr in MUFG's Capital Market Strategy Group, as well as Toby Petrostelli, the Head of Environmental and Sustainability Management at MUFG. It's Wednesday, October 20th, 2021. Welcome to the podcast, Haley and Toby.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So Toby, why don't we start off with you? A lot is happening in the evolution of ESG right now. Can you tell our listeners what some of the most important recent developments are as it pertains to the potential for mandatory ESG disclosure requirements for companies?
Absolutely. Thank you again, John. The evolution of ESG is definitely gaining momentum here in the US, truly taking a lead from Europe in recent years. We see disclosures on ESG factors will definitely become standardized and widespread by the end of the decade across oceans for certain. As we've seen with corporate governance reform, intensified pressure from investors will really serve as a major catalyst for this change. And we're really seeing that right now on the forefront here in the US. Regulators will definitely play a leading role. This will be with either a comply or explain code of best practice and truly address ENS issues, including that of climate-related metrics. Enhanced ESG disclosures will pave the way for investment professionals, financial institutions like ours, to better incorporate ESG risk assessment into our decision-making process. However, as we've seen, climate change will become a dominant theme for all sectors, including those that are emission intense. They will participate in this transition to a low-carbon economy and begin to develop transparent reporting practices if they've not already. So there are several existing reporting standards that have served as a blueprint for the anticipated mandatory disclosure we're going to see, inclusive of the likes TCFD, GRI, and SASB. But in respect to the timeline for disclosures here in the US, much has ramped up since President Biden took office just in May of this year. And he executed an executive order on climate resilience and has taken a whole of government approach, establishing teams of ESG experts, cabinet members to respond to climate change, truly promoting the resilience of the US financial system to climate-related financial risk. This executive order really illustrates a roadmap for measuring, disclosing, managing, and mitigating climate-related financial risk across the economy, while catalyzing public and private investment to seize the opportunity of a net zero clean energy future. That's really where we come in. As a bank source of capital for clients. We see several recommendations coming out of this office, including a forthcoming report from the Financial Stability Oversight Council, FSOC, that's due out. It could be even as early as this week, but we anticipate this very soon. They've really kicked off the first step in a robust process of US financial regulators developing the capacity and analytical tools to mitigate climate-related financial risk. Treasury Secretary, in her role as the chair of FSOC, will engage with various members, including the SEC, the CFTC, and even the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, to name a few, on how this will impact financial risk and the industries. Consistent with this, also to note, the SEC is developing recommendations to the commission for a mandatory disclosure rule for public issuers. That's intended to bring greater clarity to investors around material risk and opportunities that climate change pose, as well to investments. We're anticipating that proposal to come out the latest first quarter of 22. And I also just want to note that in addition, the Treasury Department's Federal Insurance Office is also launching a process to address climate-related risk in the insurance sector, with a focus on assessing the availability and affordability of insurance coverage in high-risk areas for traditionally underserved communities, another touch point that the Biden-Harris administration is addressing in their orders. So much to see and a lot to anticipate literally in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, not to generalize too much, but that is an absolute ton. So thanks for that, Toby. Haley, why don't we swing over to you? And I really wanted to follow up on one of the points Toby just mentioned here. Early in President Biden's term, we heard a lot about the SEC investigating mandatory ESG disclosures for U.S. corporates. What's the latest, and when can we expect to hear guidance on this?
Sure, John. Thanks. I break what's happening at the SEC. I break it into sort of two key developments as it pertains to ESG disclosure. The first is what we saw at the end of September, which was an announcement that the SEC is going to more strictly enforce their 2010 commission guidance regarding disclosure related to climate change. That disclosure rule essentially allows companies to determine what types of climate risks will be material for their businesses, and requires them to incorporate those into their SEC filings. What I mean by they say they're going to have some stricter enforcement there, they have already sent letters to numerous companies in the United States, and they've also posted a sample letter on their website where they essentially say that they are going to go out and ask companies why they have material disclosures in their annual sustainability reports or on their websites that they are not including in their SEC filings. The key here, though, is that this is still under the 2010 guidance, which means the company still has the authority to determine what metrics and what information are material to their business. And so we really see that as sort of an interim guideline or an interim guidance until we get the new metrics and the new standards, which Toby mentioned will be coming out sometime between the end of Q4 of this year and Q1 of next year. These new requirements and metrics are going to be more standardized. And to Toby's point, they're designed to help investors determine the material risks and opportunities associated with climate change, but also with human capital management issues. Some of the areas that we expect to be in focus, some of the areas that we expect to be a part of these standardized metrics will be emissions disclosures that will include scope 1 and scope 2 emissions. And we'll likely have something around phasing in scope 3 emissions disclosures as well. There will also likely be a scenario analysis that incorporates a look at physical, legal, market, and economic changes, and asks companies to look at both their physical and transition risks. And then there's going to be a verification process for these labels of green, sustainable, low carbon. We've talked a lot in the past about greenwashing and the risk of greenwashing. And so the SEC is really going to try and crack down on that process through this verification process for those sustainable labels. And then finally, there's also going to be something around qualitative disclosures, the things that may currently be in the annual sustainability reports, something saying, where these are going to be housed in the 10-Ks or in other financial filings. We had originally expected this guidance to come out ahead of COP26. That, as we said, is now being pushed back. And we do think that September announcement of the stricter enforcement will sort of tide us over until we get the firmer new metrics in Q1 of next year.
So Toby, I'm curious, how are banks specifically going to be impacted by the mandatory disclosure requirements that Haley just detailed? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean for their relationship with the companies that they lend to?
Mm-hmm. Well, as just mentioned, Haley had said, COP26 agenda is set to begin November, and we're really heading into kind of a policy tipping point. We're anticipating a global stock take really on the implementation of the Paris Climate Accord and how countries are signaling their commitment to net zero. Approximately 174 countries already, representing 70% of the global GDP, have made net zero commitments so far. So what does that mean, right? So in order for countries to decarbonize, they must rely on its key constituents. This immediately impacts how companies will be at the forefront of this nexus, right? The nexus of climate change and the financial systems. So how we as a bank address this is critical to the sustainability of our companies and our own operations. So with that in mind, we are embarking on what I consider really a data challenge, looking to forecast climate-related risk as they relate to our clients. So our informed decisions are really based on the data they provide. We can only be as good as the data they provide. We can enhance our ability to make more informed investment decisions with standardized and comparable metrics moving forward. This is really obviously where the regulators come in. So how do we mitigate these risks, or a key pillar for our risk management teams? How best to incorporate both the fiscal and transition risks Haley mentioned earlier into our frameworks and each and every risk stripe will be critical as we move forward. Currently, with the data we do have available, despite the challenges, we've begun a series of long-term climate stress tests, near-term climate variable tests. We've established an integrated methodology to account for carbon exposure, especially in our hard-to-abate industries, so really taking a perspective on our oil and gas, power, auto sectors, really defining what our vulnerabilities are there based on those asset classes. And then ultimately, we'll adjust our capital risk weights, right, for bank exposure and really face any acute transition risks we see coming forward. The role of the regulators will be critical in this, so we can access and have the ability to assess the reliable and consistent comparable data points that we're all anticipating. So in order to really participate in financing this clean energy transition for our clients, we've set a few targets ourselves. We will anticipate a carbon neutrality plan that has been stated for our financed portfolio by 2050. We've also committed to spending over $330 billion in the next decade to enhance our clients' ability to perform on this energy transition. That sustainable finance will focus not only on the E, but also on the S and G. So this is a global commitment spearheaded out of our head office in Tokyo and replicated here in the Americas. So we'll be focusing closely on that and releasing interim targets so we can identify our pathway and achieve these goals in the coming years. Much work ahead of us, but looking forward to it, collaborating with everyone here at MUFG to make that happen. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And that's obviously a huge, huge focus for MUFG. So Haley, a little bit earlier in the podcast, I think you both did a great job of going through the, you know, all these pending disclosure requirements. So I guess my question to you to kind of wrap things up is, what can our clients and companies just more broadly do now to prepare for these pending disclosure requirements?
I think it's really important that companies look at this from sort of a whole of company approach, the same way that the Biden administration has very clearly said that they're going to take a whole of government approach to this issue. And what I mean by this is that collecting data on emissions or collecting other relevant data is not something that's going to be siloed within the sustainability office of a company. This is a full company strategy that needs to be developed at the board level. It needs to be worked in close partnership with the treasury team, with the sustainability office. And it's something that companies are going to need to put dollars behind. This is coming more quickly than many have anticipated. And it's really important to start building the infrastructure and the systems that allow you to start collecting data. And I think when you start to think about what kind of metrics are going to be needed and what kind of systems are going to be in place, there's already a lot of data points out there. As Toby mentioned before, you have the TCFD, you have the GRI. Those are two international standards boards that have put forth voluntary disclosure standards that have been widely accepted by investors is quite important. When you want to drill in on a more industry-specific basis, the SASB framework is remarkably helpful in understanding some of the key data points that will be relevant within each industry. So it's important today to start building these systems, be able to answer the data requests in some of those international frameworks, and really start putting the investment in today, which will certainly pay dividends down the road as these things become mandatory.
Thanks. That's helpful. And for our listeners, I'd encourage you to see the recently released and very comprehensive publication entitled Expectations for Mandatory ESG Disclosure from MUFG's Capital Markets Strategy Team. And if you are not receiving these publications, please get in touch with Haley, Toby, or me. Haley, Toby, that was great. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us, John.
Appreciate it, John. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.